quickly realized I don't want to do business either. I like the concepts, but I don't like sitting through the classes. But Fort Collins was great. It was a small college town, sort of like Las Cruces down here. And it was fun because, I don't know, it was away from home. So I was definitely free. I was able to do anything I wanted to, whenever I wanted to. My first semester did really good in school and still had a lot of fun. Second semester, not so much, not because I was having so much fun, but I just kind of gave up. I found out that I wasn't getting a loan I needed, and so I was going to end up owing tons of money that I wasn't going to be able to pay back over the summer. So I knew I wasn't going to school the following fall. And so I just stopped caring. And it was business classes, so I really didn't care. I'm sorry if you guys are business people, but it wasn't for me. Just like I'm sure parallel computing is not for you. Anyway, so Fort Collins is great. I was on the floor with a lot of great people, had a lot of great friends. I still have a lot of friends that lived on that floor. Unfortunately, they got invited to a volleyball game that I didn't hear about for some odd reason, and I love volleyball. So me not being able to go to this game was like, oh, what happened? How did I not hear? And so they got connected with the college group up there in Fort Collins. The church is called Some of You, and it was just starting. I went complete opposite direction. I became the wild child. Like I said, I wasn't going to worry about school because I wasn't going to school in the fall. So I just had fun and lots of it. Fast forward, a whole bunch of jobs, working long hours, finally back in school. It was 6 years later, and a friend invited me to the college group. I didn't realize it was the same college group that like my friends from the floor had joined, but I walked in. It was kind of an awkward time because I walk in and the sermon that they were giving to the college group, it was like right before the semester was beginning. It was like, we need to love on new people. There's going to be a lot of new people coming to campus. We just need to love on them. So if you don't know them, you need to go up and talk to them. And walking into a church for the first time, it's like, oh, this is not what you want to hear. It's like, I just want to stay in the back and all that. But it ended up, my friend was like, I think you know more people here than I do. It's like, because I saw a whole bunch of those people from my floor, like Aaron Ritter and Haas and a whole bunch of others. And so it was neat seeing them because I hadn't seen them in like 6 years. And then there's people from the job I had at the library. There's people from just like all different aspects of my life. And everyone's like, why are you here? This is awesome. Like, who invited you? And so it was a whole bunch of like catching up with different people that I already talked to quite a bit. So it was great. Then later that semester, I don't know, it was another, I feel like I go in very highs and then very lows. It was just a really rough semester that semester. But I look back at it now and it's like, I think God was just tearing me down, taking away everything that was like this other world and saying, you know this is trash, you know this is trash, you know this is trash. And so after my birthday, again, I was still the wild child at this point, mind you. I just had a really rough week, a whole bunch of things, like a whole bunch of hopes I had were just kind of smashed, and it was just a rough birthday week. And so, I don't know, in God's providence, I sat down with my friend Aaron, and he went through the gospel with me. He shared, like, truth with me, and it was nothing new. I knew all the parts of it, but the difference was he kind of put it in a way that said, like, it just laid it out. It was like, talked about how God's love for me, how he forgave me, and then how he redeemed me. He just wants a relationship with me. And so I sat and gave my life to Christ that night. At least I prayed a prayer. I think the following week, I know the following week, I went to a conference, and the speaker was like talking a whole bunch of things. I mean, it's a college group, right? So it's a whole bunch of, this is what life's supposed to be like, following Christ and all that. And so I remember the second night, I walked out to, there was a lake out there, and this is up in Winter Park. And so it was cold, but I was like, I'm just sitting there going, God, I don't know what to do. I'm lost and I need help. I just need you. And it's like, whatever you want me to do, you can do. And I had like tears streaming down my face. And I'm not a crier by any means. When my grandfather died, who was very much like a father figure to me growing up, I shed like a tear. I don't cry. But like I said, sitting before God that night, I was bawling. And that's the one I would definitely say, like, I don't know, in the book of life, if they have the dates. I don't know if it's the week before or that night, but I have a feeling it's going to be that night. Because it's like, okay, God, whatever you want, I'm in. Like, wherever you want me to go, I'll go. And whatever you want me to do, I'll do. And it was freeing. And God tested that the very next morning. The speaker was like, one of the things you can do is to show your faith and like is to get baptized. If you haven't been baptized, get baptized, because it's just it doesn't help you get to heaven, but it's a proclamation of your faith. And so I just turned to my friends like, okay, like I'm gonna get baptized. And so he was like, sure. And like, he was happy because it's like, oh, how am I gonna have this conversation? But it was one of those, I told God the night before, it's like, okay, whatever you want. It's like, okay, get baptized. Okay, God, I'll get baptized. Mind you, again, this all happened within a week. So all those friends that I talked about earlier, I get in the pool. I'm the first one to get dunked. Luckily, it was a hot tub and not the lake. The lake was really cold. But I got in, and like I said, very, very few people there knew that I had prayed to receive Christ the week before. And so they were super excited about it, because they didn't know. And so I get baptized, come up, and like everyone's coming up, congratulations, congratulations, as my hair is like freezing because it's freezing out. It's like, I gotta go inside, it's cold. But it was fun. But again, God said, like, do this, and I did it. And he blessed me for it. And so I was part of a college group. I was bringing the average age up quite a bit on a small group. But my friend started a international student ministry a little bit after the conference. He's like, do you want to come join? And I said, sure. And it's like, this will be great. And so it was one of those, I don't know, we didn't know what we were doing. Like, I literally went to a conference in December after, like, it was October when I got baptized. December, I went to another conference. And it's like, I went to a talk that talked about international student missions. I thought it was about being sent out. I didn't realize it was about, like, meeting those that come. And so I was like, okay, this is good. My friend Aaron just kind of followed me because there wasn't any other real talks. And so he was just kind of supporting me in whatever I was doing. And so, but God put it on his heart that, hey, maybe him and his wife should do this. And so like 6 months later, they actually kind of started that and I joined them. It was fun. But then God got to a point where it's like, we need someone in this building. It's called the International House, not of Pancakes. Although that's a good place too, and we went there often. But it was this international house. It wasn't all international students, but it was quite a bit. It was like 60-40, but it was definitely non-traditional students, a lot of graduate students, a couple people I had worked with in the microbiology department, but they came from all over the place. They came from Saudi Arabia. I had a roommate from Saudi Arabia, Morocco. That was those. But then I knew people, a whole bunch of people from South America, from Asia, like all over the world. It was like one of those things. It's like when, like in Matthew 28, it's like, go and make disciples of all nations. It's like, I can literally do this from my apartment. And I was like, this is awesome. But then God still was not done with telling me where to go. And so eventually, my friend asked me if I wanted to move down to El Paso to help plant a church. And so I had like a funny picture of someone planting a plant. There's a guy on the west side. The first time he heard about the church plant, he thought it was an actual plant. And so I was like, oh, not an actual plant, but alas, we don't have PowerPoint. But no, it's not about like just starting a church and leave. It's about starting a church, helping people grow, doing what I do now. Every once in a while, I get to stand up in front of you guys and talk. But there's a lot of other things I do down here that, I don't know, I just get to be part of a big family. And so, yeah, some of you in Fort Collins where I was at, and then some of you in Greeley where Misty was at, and there's about 60 of us that actually moved down in 2007. And so we started a church over on the west side, went down to the downtown hotel for a little bit, and then kind of bounced around on the west side for a little bit until we settled in where we're at now, off of like Red and Donovan. And then about 5 years ago, Misty and I were talking, and it was like, I think God's calling us to help out with the Northeast. We had a lot of people who had been living in the Northeast. They're all military. Most of them are helicopter pilots. Great bunch of guys. And it was like they were driving across the mountain every Sunday morning. And then even during one of the small groups, we're like, we need to do something in the Northeast. So we did like a small group for about a week or two, it seemed like. And then we started like an outright like church service up there. So we were up there, but we didn't have like a core person, a core family. And so Missy and I, even though we had bought a house on the west side, friends of ours got married and needed a place to live. So you're like, you live you live in our house, we'll go to the Northeast. And so we did. And then a year later, we moved slightly farther south to the airport where we are at now. So Missy and I waited a little bit longer and then moved down by UTEP. So now we're like, it's slightly closer to come here than the west side, but like by a half mile. It was just like, we see a need. We just want to be able to serve. We just want to be able to have purpose in what we're doing. And so I bring all this up because what I'm going to talk about today is just a life of faith. And so I'm going to go through a couple of the things that I've thought about over the years as I've done this. I mean, I've done it in like 5 minutes, right? But this is more like 15 years in the process, 20 years in the process. Scary. But let me pray real quick and we'll get into like more the meat of the message. Father, just thank you for this morning. Father, just it seems like one of those mornings that if it's going to go wrong, it has. So Father, just I just pray, Father, that the electricity stays on, nothing else goes wrong, nothing else breaks. Father, that the kids in the Sunday school and nursery, Father, are just, I don't know, Father, just they're fed and loved. Father, just, I don't know, Father, just ask you just work here today. If anything else, Father, just work in my own heart. A lot of this stuff, Father, that I'm going to share, it's like, I know, Father, it's stuff that you want me to hear as well. And it's always a good reminder. So change us and help us to grow. So anyway, so if we had a PowerPoint, we could look at Matthew 8, 5 through 13. If you guys want to open up, great. If not, I'll go ahead and read it. It's the centurion. A centurion came to him asking for help. Lord, my servant is lying at home paralyzed in terrible anguish. Jesus said to him, I will come and heal him. But the centurion replied, Lord, I am not worthy to have you come under my roof. Instead, just say the word and my servant will be healed. For I too am a man under authority with soldiers under me. I say to this one, go, and he goes. And to the other, to another, come, and he comes. And to my slave, do this, and he does it. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed and said to those who followed him, I tell you the truth, I have not found such a faith in anyone in Israel. I tell you, many will come from the east and west to share the banquet with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the sons of the kingdom will be thrown out into the outer darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then Jesus said to the centurion, go, just as you believed, it will be done for you. And the servant was healed at that hour. And so I want to highlight two words in that. It's in the phrase, I have not found such faith in anyone in Israel. So the idea of faith. And the other word is believed. So just as you believed, it will be done. So the first two blanks are a belief. A belief is an idea someone holds about nature of reality. And faith is a firm trust or confidence in someone or something. And so a biblical definition of faith comes from Hebrews 11:1. It says, now faith is being sure of what we hope for, being convinced of what we do not see. This passage struck me early on in my Christian walk. Like, I wanted that kind of faith. I want to be able to say, go, and I just go ahead first and like trust God. I wanted to, yeah, that was just pretty much summed it up. I was like, I want that kind of faith. Early on in my walk, we went through James quite a bit. And so I want to read a section of James 2, 14 through 19. So what good is it, brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but does not have works? Can this kind of faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacks daily food, and one of you says to him, go in peace, keep warm and eat well, but you do not give them what the body needs, what good is it? So also faith, if it does not have works, is dead by being by itself. But someone will say, you have faith, I have works. Show me your faith without works. I will show you faith by my works. You believe that God is one, well and good. Even the demons believe that and tremble with fear. And so I want to do a disclaimer. I am not promoting a works-based gospel. I don't think we work our way into heaven. I think it's purely by Christ. But In the response to that love that he's shown us, I think it should change our lives. I will hopefully kind of show you that throughout the rest of this time. But my faith in Christ is that it's I have a trust in Christ. So if he says go, I can go and know that he's going to take care of me. If he says stay or don't do whatever, I do it because I know there's a reason behind it. And so it's not just I believe in Christ, but I'm trusting in Christ. I trust him for my salvation. I trust him to lead me. I trust him to protect me. And so it's more than just belief. I sat with a friend up in Fort Collins. We talked about this passage for a long, long time. And for him, it was like, as much as you do, how can you not believe works are involved in salvation? And so we went through this line by line, and I kind of laid it out. It's my works are important to me. I think God appreciates them. But it's in response to what Christ has done versus trying to get a response from God. So, yeah. So that would be like, there's a lot of people that believe in God and Christ, but they would choose not to follow him. In James, it says the demons even believe in Christ and God, but they're not going to heaven with us. And so they kind of give an idea too. In Hebrews, it talks about, Hebrews is the hall of faith, right? And so it's a whole bunch of things people have done throughout the Old Testament and New Testament, just about the things they did because they believed. They trusted God so much that they'd be willing to leave the family, stand and be martyred. And so it was a good, I don't know, it's good to kind of have that balance. And then the disciples, in Mark 10, 28 through 31, Peter began to speak to him, "Look, we have left everything to follow you." Jesus said, "I tell you the truth, there is no one who has left home or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or fields for my sake and for the sake of the gospel who will not receive in this age 100 times as much. Homes, brothers, sisters, mothers, children's fields, all with persecutions, and in the age to come, eternal life. But many who are first will be last, and the last first." And so even Peter is like, hey, I'm giving up my life. We're all in for following you. And Jesus said that it's going to cost him, but I think he won out in the end. Some more modern day-ish people. How many of you guys have heard of Corrie Ten Boom? This has been like World War II when the Nazis were slaughtering a whole bunch of Jews. She was a Christian, and her family were hiding Jews in the Jewish underground in Nazi Germany at the time. She was caught and imprisoned in a political concentration camp. If you guys ever get a chance to read her story, you should. It's horrific, but it's amazing to see her faith lived out. I don't know how to describe it other than it's amazing. You would have to have strong faith to be able to do something like that. And so that's like one of those extreme examples, like in the hard kind of situations, right? Who knows what, I don't know if I would have her kind of faith. I pray that I would, but I don't. But I wanted to kind of give another example of a gentleman who was saved a long time ago, but God put it on his heart to share the gospel with 10 people every day. And he did it for 40 years. If you guys don't know, this is Mr. Gregner from Sydney. And so the George Street evangelist. So he would hand out tracts. He would talk to people and be like, hey, do you know you're going to heaven if you die tonight? And no one ever responded in that 40 years. There was a gentleman who was talking at church, and some guy in the back was like, hey, can I share a quick testimony? And he said, sure, you got 3 minutes. So the guy stood up and shared. It's like, he was talking about this guy who handed him a tract, and he kind of blew him off, but later on read the tract and ended up getting saved. And then he was somewhere else and heard a very similar story. And same thing, it was George Street. And then went somewhere else. It was a whole bunch more people. And so he started piecing together. I think in the end, there was over 5,000 people that he knew of that was impacted by this guy going out day after day, handing out 10 tracts, talking to 10 people. And he had no idea. And so the guy that was piecing all this together was in Sydney. And it's like, hey, do you guys know who this is? And they're like, oh, yeah, it's Mr. Gregner. He's over here. He was old and frail, couldn't go out anymore. And so the gentleman got to go and talk to him and said, hey, I've talked to all these people about how you shared the gospel with them. The guy's like, I've never heard of anyone receiving anything, like receiving Christ out of all those years. And so it was kind of neat because like 2 weeks after the guy talked to Mr. Gregner, Mr. Gregner passed away. So he kind of got the glimpse of what kind of impact he was going to have. Again, this guy went to a small little Baptist church in Sydney, and it was just being faithful day after day. Again, for me, I'd be super discouraged in something like that. It's like, oh, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? But yet he was faithful in doing the little things that God called him to do. And like I said, there was 5,000 people that the guy could put together, but who knows what kind of impact he had overall. And so whether it be Cain and Abel, just Abel giving the offering that's pleasing to God, or Mr. Gregner, which that story, like the him passing was, I think, not super long ago, a more modern day. So you're talking tons and tons of time, but people just trusting God to do amazing things and keep going. So what hinders us from being able to do stuff like that? I came up with like four of them. And so I'll go through the four, the fight, like then your blanks, it's going to be fight, blank. Those four would be the things I'll go through first, and then we'll go back through and you can fill in the ones, how we fight them. So the first one's anger. Obviously, if we're angry, it kind of keeps us from walking out in faith. So James 4, 1 through 3 says, where do conflicts and where do the quarrels among you come from? Is it not from this, from your passions that battle inside you? You desire and you do not have. You murder and envy and you cannot obtain. You quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly so that you can spend it on your passions. I get this verse. I mean, like, just the things I want, I'm like, oh, why won't so-and-so do this? Why won't so-and-so do that? And it's like, half the time, it's just over stupid things. If you step back and look at it, but there's an anger or frustration there. And a lot of times that keeps me from walking out in faith. Again, some of these may ring or resound, like ring truer for you. Others, maybe not so much, but I think we all struggle with these four things in some degree. But moving on, the second one is fear. The what ifs. Like this would be like, well, if I'm going to follow God, what if he makes me go to Africa or South America? What if he makes me give away all my money? What if he makes me go talk to people that I don't want to talk to? What if he makes me stay single all my life? What if he keeps me from having kids? What if he just calls me away from that family? There's a lot of what ifs. Like, what if God would do this to me if I follow him? And there's that fear there, right? We also have the fear of, like, what if people don't like me after this? What if people reject me? What if people think I'm weird? Some of us, that would not have anything to do with our faith. We're just kind of weird to begin with. But you get the idea. It's like, it's not just what would God make me do, but it's like, what would people think of me? And again, it all comes down to, it's like I don't want to step out because I'm afraid of what's going to happen. Whether it's like being kicked out of the family or if it's being kicked out of work or whatever. And so there's a lot of fear that can go into following, keeping us from following in steps of faith. The next one is pride. 1 Peter 5:5 says, God opposes the proud. And it's one of those, sometimes God just won't call you to do something because you're just proud. It's like, you can handle it on your own. You don't need anyone. I don't want and I don't need help. I can definitely fall into this. I think God's given me abilities to do a lot of things, but in the end, like the things that count, the things that I think that count, it's not, I don't do them on my own strength. I have to rely on God to be able to do them. But there's the opposite side of pride. I think we always think of like the person walking around all puffed up and big headed, but there's also those, and I would call this pride in the sense that, like, oh, God can't use me. Like, I'm too messed up. I'm not good enough. I don't have anything to offer. Who would want to talk to me? And so pretty much I consider that pride because if you're pretty much saying, God, you're amazing, but I'm helpless. You can't do anything with me. So we're saying God's like power is limited. And so it's one of those weird kind of like, how is this not like, how is this pride and not humility? It's not, because we're saying God's so weak that he can't change me. He can't use something that's broken. When in reality, we're all broken. We're all broken in different areas of lives. Some of us have weaknesses in different areas, but God still works through us. And so realizing that, yes, I am weak, I am broken, but God's still going to do amazing things through me. Again, it could be like Corrie Ten Boom, where it's these cool things in a concentration camp, Or it could be like Mr. Gergen, where he just sits and hands out something every day. And it's like, again, God did amazing things through both of those. And they look way different in both cases. The last one would be distraction. So what hinders acts of faith? I think is distraction. So I had this great slide of the movie Up, you know, with the old guy. But the thing I wanted to point out was the dog. It's like the slide would say, has a picture of the dog kind of up in the old guy's face and saying, I've just met you and I love you. And then right below it's like, squirrel. Like, and that's so true with a lot of things I do, right? I was like, God, I'm so in. And the next day it's like, oh, look at this. And it's like, God, I'm so in. Oh, look at that. And I'm back and forth. And it's like, God's like, no, right here. Like, focus on this for a little bit. And but yet, especially nowadays, we're like, how many of us will sit on phones for hours and hours and hours? I know people are like, who'll give up Facebook for a week and are amazed at how much they can get done because of the time that Facebook took up. And again, a lot of the distractions in my life aren't necessarily bad. I'm not saying Facebook is bad, but when you're on there for 20 hours, at some point you're going to start not interacting with God's family. You're not going to interact with people that God's put in your way to really love on. And so distractions, I don't know, it's hard because, again, a lot of it could be good. I love, not James Rawlings, Jim Collins, that's it. James Rawlings, this novel series. James Collins does like management books. Good to Great is the name of the book. One of his things is the biggest enemy of great is good. You can get caught up in doing a lot of good things, but there's one thing that you could be great at, but because you're working so much on those good things that you're not able to focus on that great thing. And I think that would be the distraction. We could be doing a lot of good things, but God's like, no, I want you here doing this one thing. And another thing with the distraction, in Matthew 13:22, this would be the parable of the sower. The seed that's sown among thorns is a person who hears the word, but worldly cares and the seductiveness of wealth and choke the word, so if it produces nothing. Meaning, it's like you hear these amazing things, but then we just get caught up in what the world wants, what the world is saying. These are important. When God's saying, no, this is what I'm calling you to. This is what I think is important. So how can we overcome? I was going to joke around about how Blaise should do, like Overcomer or whatever. It'd be fun to listen to him try to sing that. But alas, I don't think he would ever do that. So we fight anger with love and forgiveness. Colossians 3:12-15 say, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with a heart of mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving one another. If someone happens to have a complaint against anyone else, just as the Lord has forgiven you, so also forgive others. And all these virtues add love, which is the perfect bond. Let the peace of Christ be in control in your heart, for you were in fact called as one body to this peace, and be thankful. And so a lot of times I get angry because I want something to go a certain way. And Colossians is saying, no. Just realize that you do stupid things as well. Bear with them. Love them, forgive them. Like, they probably have no idea what they're actually doing in the first place. And so be the one that kind of goes and be that bond. Just put on that love. The next one is fight fear with knowledge and trust. This would be one of those, I don't know, if you want to say what God wants, one of the easiest things to do is read his word. Read the Bible. Understand what he actually is calling us to. Again, I'm saying a whole bunch of stuff today. I would hope you guys go back and filter it through what the word actually says. By knowing what the word says, it makes you, one, be able to understand what God would want. But two, you can see time and time again how God has been faithful. So if he was faithful in so many different things, why would I not expect him to be faithful with me? Fight pride with humility. 1 Peter 5:5 again. God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And to me, humility is not saying, oh, I'm worthless. It's like, God, I need your help in accomplishing this. God, work with me, train me, use me, just whatever you want, let it be what you want and not what I want. To me, that's where humility comes in. It's not saying I'm worthless, but instead it's saying, you made me the way I am. There's a reason I am the way I am. what is that reason? Let me go forth in that reason. Fight distraction with commitment. That would be one of those things that, like, just commit to the following God. Can you imagine if I would get married to Misty in the 9 years that we've been married, if I would just go home after work, sit on the couch, turn on the TV, do nothing, get up in the morning, eat my breakfast, go to work, and, like, not say a word to her, not do anything for her. Like, how many of you would say that's a good marriage? It was a poor, like, it's a poor relationship. There's almost, like, no relationship, right? So the commitment would be, I go in and say, okay, I love my wife. How can I love my wife? Try not to be mean in this. She's overly picky about being clean. And I know this. A lot of people that know her know this. And so it's one of those, in the morning, I try to do the dishes. In the morning, like, as I'm up and about, I throw in some laundry. So I can do the little things that I know I can do that she's not going to be having to redo anyway. And so I try to get those out of the way. That way she can do what she's better at. And then we move on. And then, so it's like little things. Just, I'm like, I know her. And, like, I'm stepping out in faith and saying, okay, I know I can do these. I want to bless her. So I'm going to do it. And so it's just, it takes time. It costs me free time. But it's that commitment. And it's also more of a focus time. Because it's like, I need to bless her, so I'm going to do this. So how about you? What is Christ calling you? Or how about you? Christ is calling you out. I don't know if you guys know it or not, but Christ wants to use everyone. Christ wants a relationship with everyone. In Revelation 3:20 and 21, it says, listen, I am standing at the door and knocking. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into his home and share a meal with him, and he with me. I will grant the one who conquers permission to sit with me on my throne, just as I too conquered and sat down with my Father on his throne. So, again, Christ is sitting there, knocking on the door and saying, hey, let me in. Hey, let's have a meal. Let's talk. Let's have a relationship. But it's not about just a list of do's and don'ts. It's a relationship. And again, with Missy, there's a lot of things I should not do, right? And I don't think anyone would argue that. And there's a lot of things I should do. It's not about the list of do's and don'ts. It's about my relationship with her. If I want a stronger relationship, I'm going to interact with her more. I should talk to her more. I should do the dishes. I should help her with the laundry. I should do a lot of things. Again, it's not I'm checking off things just to please her. It definitely pleases her, but it's just out of love that I do it. And then it goes beyond that. It's a committed relationship with Christ as well. It's not just, I was like, oh yeah, I believe in you, and then, like, I don't actually interact. In Ephesians 5:22, I always love the passage on marriage, which I'll read real quick. Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord, because the husband is the head of the wife, also as also Christ is the head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body. But as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her, to sanctify her by cleansing her with the washing of water by the word, so that he may present the church to himself as glorious, not having a stain or wrinkle or any such blemish, but holy and blameless. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one has ever hated his own body, but he feeds it and takes care of it, just as Christ also does the church. For we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and will be joined to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This mystery is great, but I am actually speaking with reference to Christ and the church. So I love this. He sets it up like, to me, this is why marriage is important. It's a depiction of what our relationship with Christ is. We're a bride of Christ. And so just like you guys would all yell at me if I would go cheat on Misty, but yet somehow we think it's okay to cheat on Christ. And it's like we have that double standard. It's like, oh, you can't do it on the here and now, but here I'm going to go like run off and do a whole bunch of things that you know Christ wouldn't want you to do. Again, he's not going to kick you out of heaven, but it's going to put a strain on that relationship. And so I love that passage just because it puts a firm picture of like how my relationship with Christ actually is, how my relationship with Christ can grow. Like, I love my wife. I'm going to take care of her. And in doing so, our love for one another grows deeper. Just like Christ will take care of us, and our love for him will go deeper and deeper. So I kind of have a idea of a dual vision. There's the here and now, like in the theme of a life of faith. There's the here and now. I'm like, what can I do now? Like my stupid example for this, I'm reading a book on being single. It's written by a woman for women and all that. And so there's no reason I need to read that, like personally. But I also lead a small group that has a lot of single women on it. And I want to be able to figure out what's going on in their head, give them good things, see if this book's even worth saying, hey, maybe read this. And so it's the things I do, I don't do because it's going to help me grow always. Some of it's kind of random. But I also, as I've been thinking about like this message and a whole bunch of others, there's a lot of ways that the author of the book is saying, think through your actions. You're free to do anything you want. But the freedom is kind of limited in the choices that you make, because those choices will like limit things. There's obviously bad, really bad choices, right? But then like there's the choices to go wherever you want, but there's also the choices to follow God and do what he wants. And so make wise choices. But so that would be the here and now. But there's also the big picture, right? We're not going to be here forever. I'll be happy if I make it another 30 years. My family has a lot of cancers and heart disease and a whole bunch of other junk in it. And so my time is limited. Your guys' time is limited. But we have the eternity to kind of think through too. So a little bit of suffering here is going to like seem like nothing when it comes to being face-to-face with God in the future. And so keep focus here, but realize it's just a drop in the bucket comparatively. Two more last thoughts. Following God will cost you. In Luke 9:23-25, it says, then he said to them all, if anyone wants to become my follower, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. For what does it benefit a person if he gains the whole world but loses or forfeits himself? Again, there are certain things that, yeah, God will probably call you. Like, maybe this isn't the best idea for you. It'll hurt you. Like, in the long run, it's going to hurt you. And I don't want you to be hurt. I love you so much that I'm going to pull what you think is important to you away from you. Like, for me, El Paso is really not the best career choice in the world. There's, like, only a few positions in El Paso total I'm qualified for. I could easily go to California. I could easily go out east. There's a lot of places I can go and get a really well-paying job, but I didn't move down here for a well-paying job. I'm not staying here for a well-paying job. If I get one, I'm happy, but I'm also going to be try to be content in what I have. I have a great job at UTEP. I actually do love El Paso. I love the lack of humidity. Even the 20% days are like seem humid to me. And coming from St. Louis, where it's like 90%, this is great down here. And so there's a lot of things that's like, everyone was like, why are you moving to El Paso when I moved down? And it's like, now I'm like, I don't know why I wouldn't have moved to El Paso. There's so many things that God's like called me to, but there was definitely a cost. I didn't mention earlier, but the year that we moved down to El Paso, Fort Collins was ranked number one mid-sized town to live in the nation. And so again, everyone's like, El Paso? What? And so, but again, it's like, I said, no, I don't care. I'll go. But God was faithful and gave me a whole bunch of new friends, gave me a good life, gave me a wife, and gave me kids. And so, like, yeah, it cost me, but I got so much more in return. So the last verse I have is John 10:9-10. It says, Jesus said again, I tell you the solemn truth. I am the door for the sheep. All who came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters through me, he will be saved and will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come so that they may have life and may have it abundantly. So again, like even though Christ, following Christ will sometimes feel like it's going to cost you your life, but I don't know. It's kind of funny because it's like, even though it costs everything, he gives you abundant life. He gives you more than your heart could ever imagine. But it requires us to kind of step out in faith in this walk. And it's like, do I know what's going to happen next week? I have no clue. But I don't need to know, because I know I follow a good and faithful God who loves me and loves everyone in here. with their whole heart. And so that's all I have. I'm going to close this in prayer and let Blaze come up.